You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
They spend most all their time in this incubator, which is a glass box attached to machines, hearing those sounds and always getting their bloods taken by the midwives to help them get better. It's something that I did not expect to happen. And then... At that point, I didn't have a hospital bag at all. I didn't have a birthing plan. I didn't have Pampers. I didn't have any nappies. I didn't have any. I really did not have anything. And thank goodness for the NHS and the team that was there.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Net Mums podcast. This is becoming predictable, but I'm starting with a rant. Alison, Christmas, relatives asking for presents ideas for your kids. All of mine, grannies, uncles, aunts, grandparents, are now asking me what my kids want, and I find it exhausting having to think of things from them and us. Thoughts?
I've got so many thoughts on this, Wendy. Honestly, it's a really big bugbear of mine. And I get it, that they obviously want to buy something that, you know, our children really want. But whether it's around Christmas or whether it's when it's their birthdays, we already have a huge mental load. We're thinking of present ideas from ourselves. We're probably organising parties and events and different things. And at Christmas time, we've got... You know, all the school Christmas events happening and nativities. We don't need to be thinking of ideas for other people. So, yeah, it's not okay, if you ask me.
Well, let's see if our guest today has an opinion on the matter.
Let's see. So, yeah, our guest today is a judge on Dancing on Ice. She also raised the Glitter Ball trophy on Strictly Come Dancing twice. And she has her own UK tour, Viva Carnival, kicking off in 2025. It is, of course, Oti Mabusi. Oti, welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Thank you for having me. I literally have my one-year-old here and I'm trying to bribe her with snacks so that she's quiet. So if you hear a packet of, like, crisps just going...
If we hear rustling, and, it's not you getting peckish.
You can have whatever you want as long as you're working with mommy here.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that is juggling motherhood and work right there, yes. Folks.
So tell us about family life at home, Oti, with you and your husband both being dancers. I'm guessing there's music and movement and snacks and laughter.
Yeah, all the time, especially with auntie as well, dancing. Yeah. And we get to go to the dance studio and she's literally around dancing all the time, all her lives. And then on Saturday, we watch Auntie on Saturdays, don't we? We watch Auntie on Saturday. No, I mean, I do my bit. I do my work. And the one thing I always want to do is just head back to her and spend time with her and play with her. And we have fun. We play nursery rhymes. We read. We do bath time. And I try to just maybe probably out of mom guilt make up for the time that I'm gone. With a lot of activity and snacks.
We all do that.
Yeah, that's just standard. But your little one, she's turning one soon, yes. Isn't she? How will you be celebrating?
We are going to... So first, her in-laws are coming in, so it might get loud as well. They're coming all the way from Romania, my in-laws. And my mom is here. So we're just going to do... And Mutsi's coming with her family as well. We're just going to do a little family thing. And I don't know if I can bake the cake... But I'm going to attempt to bake the cake. And then on Saturday, we're going to do a big thing with all my friends and all their kids and the dance school. Just so that we can celebrate a year of her and her being in all our lives. Because the dance school is like our extended family and we want to just share this moment with them as well.
Her entry into the world didn't go quite to plan, though, did it? Can you tell us what happened? It's quite a dramatic story.
It is, although I'm smiling now because she's literally winking at me and I don't know why. So she was born prematurely and it was a spontaneous natural birth that I had. And it was 10 weeks premature and she spent 6 weeks in the neonatal. And when it was happening, I think, because it's something that maybe people talk about, but I didn't personally hear a lot of conversations happening about premature children and what happens when your child is born that small, and they need the tubes to help them breathe, and they need tubes to help them eat, and they have to have tests. They're testing their organs if everything is working all right. And they spend all their time in this incubator, which is a glass box attached to machines, hearing those sounds and always getting their bloods taken by the midwives to help them get better. It's something that I did not expect to happen. And then at that point, I didn't have a hospital bag at all. I didn't have a birthing plan. I didn't have Pampers. I didn't have any nappies. I didn't have any. I really did not have anything. And thank goodness for the NHS and the team that was there to actually help with the right size nappies, because their skin is so thin and it's so fragile. So we need nappies that fit their bodies, but also that is gentle on their skin, because that the whole thing of your child getting better is kind of based around feel and touch and skin to skin. And the midwife team constantly tell you, do a lot of skin to skin, and you want a nappy that fits and that works well for your baby, for them to feel comfortable and for you to have that first bonding nappy change.
And I've seen those nappies, they're like really dinky,
they're so
aren't
small.
They?
They're like the size of my paw, really, they're the size of my paw, and they're really, really thin. But I think you don't imagine that even those little like paw size Pampers sometimes can be too big. And that's how small the babies come out. And I think the NHS and the team do such an incredible job just working with little babies, with little organs. And exactly.
So you're working with Pampers, aren't you, Oti? Because I was reading up earlier, their research says that 8 in 10 parents feel nervous to touch their prem baby because it's so scary. But as you've just said, it's really essential for bonding. Did you feel that? Were you scared?
Absolutely. You're apprehensive because, I don't know, I've had so many children in my life. You know, my sisters have children. We were there for the birth. They were not that size. It's really the size and how brittle the babies are. And also when you're holding them, they've still got wires attached to them. They still have pipes. They still have breathing fluid. If they have jaundice, they still very much have their eyes covered. So, yes, you're very, very nervous. You're looking forward to the first time to hold them, because obviously every single woman tells you that is the most special moment ever. But you're also scared because it's not what you expected.
I love that she's just snuffling in the background.
Yeah. She's not snuffling. She's going,
she's eating her snacks.
She's just eating.
Of course, you know, it wasn't just the premature birth that you had to deal with, because you were then suffering from sepsis, weren't you, after the birth?
Which I didn't know about. And we only found out later, because I had one hospital, but then I changed hospitals. And the second hospital, and I had an incredible doctor, her name was Nikki, who was so brilliant with me and so communicative and so amazing. I didn't know. Nobody knew. I'm okay. She's okay now. We're okay. But it might, no one knows why you have like a premature birth, but it might have been one of the things that led to it.
And while we're talking about, you know, your birth maternity experience, there's been a lot of conversation, brilliantly so, in the last few years about Black maternal health. What was your experience in terms of, do you think that you were perhaps not listened to as much, you know, by the team that were looking after you, or?
No, it wasn't like that. I think because of who I am, I have to say that that is a certain, it has its privileges. So I don't think that's what happened with me. Everything was really great. Everyone in the hospital as well, they looked like me. Most of the nurses looked like me. They were mostly African or Caribbean women. They did listen to me, but I also don't want me saying that to be the experience that a lot of other black women have, because it is true. I've spoken to so many other women that are told that their pain is not serious, that this is life, that they have to deal with it. But I was, I think they know that I'm in that public eye, and if they did something, I would talk about it. I'd be like, I'm gonna tell on y'all. But that was never something that happened to me. And again, like I've said, I don't want that to take away from the experience that many, 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 if not all, most black women do experience, which I can 100% relate to. But I have to acknowledge my privilege of having a recognizable face and saying that did not happen to me.
So a year on, I'm guessing that you've done a lot of reflecting and a lot of coming to terms with what happened. How do you think it's affected you as a person and how you've been as a mum?
I think I question what happened. I question myself a lot because I still think about what I was doing. And it's not even what I was doing. It was like, why? Why? Why was I working out so many times? Why was I working so actively? What was I trying to prove? What is the point? And there's a little bit of self-blame there where you think maybe if I had just stayed at home and relaxed, you know, and just nested, that this would have not happened. Maybe if I had just not done that workout or that dance class, or maybe if I had just done things a little bit different. And then when I think about, of course, I do want more children because she's so amazing, even if she's shouting at me now over Chris. I do want more children, and how is this experience going to change the next experience? And will I be active? I'll be a lot older. I'll be a geriatric. It will be a geriatric birth by probably that point. How will I approach that? And it forms, because of the experience, it forms an opinion on how I intend on approaching the next pregnancy, because I know it's going to be completely different as well then.
Yeah. It sounds like you had a pretty active pregnancy, but are you someone who loves being pregnant, or did you just sort of tolerate it?
I loved it so much. It's honest. I see other women now and I'm like, oh my God, I want to go back to that. I was in pain when I was pregnant, right? I was in pain, but there were so many other things, like my skin was amazing, my nails, I did have morning sickness for about maybe 2-3 weeks.
Damn you, I had it for like 40 weeks.
Sorry, I know. But then I had a premature baby, you see?
Yeah, swings and roundabouts.
I had really long hair. I think people were doing things for me, opening doors, like cooking for me, cleaning for me. My mom was here. She's still here, by the way. She's here. I really love the experience. The one of the hardest thing for me, though, and I think it was one of the signs, was I had gestational diabetes. So that then, once I found out that I had that, I think everything started to slightly go downhill. Then I was really tired. I was really thirsty all the time. And I guess that was the sepsis, because I thought, I'm really feeling like I ran a marathon when I wake up. Like, I was just exhausted. And I see some of my friends who are pregnant now, and they're just going about their day. And I can see the big difference. Hey. No. No.
What's she trying to do?
She's literally trying to go to a plank right now.
Obviously.
No.
I had gestational diabetes too, and I found by the end I had to inject insulin and kind of like pretty scary stuff. And I found it made me so much more worried about my baby. Did it the same happen to you?
Yeah, because they tell you that they're quite big at that side. I was on a metformin to try and get my sugar low. So I was really, it wasn't that high, but it was high to a point where they were worried. Like you're constantly worried. Does the medicine affect my blood, which then affects the baby? Does it make the baby drowsy? You also question, like, as a dancer, my body has been my tool of work. Oh, here we go. Sorry, they're dressing her. My tool to work. And now my body is kind of not reacting the way I thought it would.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But also, as a pro dancer, what was it like when you were pregnant, seeing your body change so much?
I loved it. No, I did love it, honestly. I didn't have... I think when you dance, and I'm being really honest, when you're dancing and there's a certain amount of pressure to look a certain way, you have to look a certain way. And when you're pregnant and it changes, I wasn't going back to dancing. I had no intentions of going back to dancing. So for the first time, that pressure to look a certain way was gone. And it felt amazing. It felt like... People were like, oh, why has she gained weight? Why is she like this? And I was just like, I'm just enjoying my life. I'm really just enjoying my life. Obviously, I was pregnant, but I was just enjoying my life. And I love the way I felt. I love the way I looked when I looked in the mirror. I had a little cute bum. You know, you get that pregnancy bum. I loved it. And I think the pressure only started to get to me after I gave birth, when people were expecting me sort of to go back to my dancer's body. And I was like, I'm not ready. I'm just not ready. And I really take my hat off to women who can, like, say, okay, I'm going to get back to that, because it's so incredibly hard. But it took me about 8-9 months to start to get back into shape. And I'm still, every day, it's still a journey, still that fight, it's still the fight with myself to look at myself in the mirror and be like, you're okay. It's still a fight to get there. Like, you're beautiful, you're good. So it's a big fight.
Yeah. You've been honest in the past about, you know, before you got pregnant, you guys were struggling to conceive. You know, when you're in that position, it can just feel like everyone else around you is getting pregnant at the drop of a hat. Was it like that for you?
I feel like social media kind of hears your algorithms and your conversations and what you talk about. It just enhances it. Most of my friends, we all have 1 year old. If you think Jeanette, Gemma, Lydia West, Fleur, all of us have 1 year old. So all of us were trying to have children around the same time. And it's almost like you have this thing in your head and you really, really want it to happen. You really, really want it to happen, and it doesn't. And it's like, well, what's wrong with me? Well, what did I do wrong? You know? And yeah, like, I think social media kind of repeats what is happening. It's like everybody's announcing their baby. You know what's happening to me now? Now, because I'm talking about... Oh, yeah, I would love to extend my family. My Instagram is second borns now. My Instagram is
everyone is scary.
Their second baby. And I'm like, when did we agree?
Think yourself lucky, because mine is all electric lawnmowers, because somebody in my house talked about an electric lawnmower. And now all I get is electric lawnmowers. So you take your second baby and be grateful that it's not electric bloody lawnmowers.
No, but it's like I'm like at night and she's waking up and she's teething and I've got the carpool there. And I just say, oh, we're on our second. I'm like, but when did you sleep? When? Like, how?
Oh, you don't. So you've said you want to have as many as you can, but obviously not quite yet, because you need to get some sleep first. There's certain things that need to happen to make a baby aren't conducive to no sleep.
I think also when I see her playing on, oh my God, she's walking. She's standing on her own. Guys, all these things are happening right now.
Is that the first time?
No. She just went.
Oh, I was going to say, are we witnessing her steps?
I know. I'm like, don't do this now. I need to get my camera out. I think also when she plays by herself, I feel really guilty. And I don't know if this is a normal thing where she's playing and she's on her own and she's playing with the toys. And I just think,
no, that's good.
She needs a friend. So that's where I am. I'm like, I just want to give her a friend. That's it.
Oh. That's so lovely.
But
that's
then you'll give her a friend and you'll come back on the podcast and say, all they do is fight. They don't play with each other. They try and scratch each other's eyes out.
That's so true. Now, listen, OT, as well as all of the TV work that you're doing, you've written a romance novel, haven't you, which comes out in summer 2025. I'm impressed because when I had a small baby, the last thing that was on my mind was romance. But it's clearly not the case for you.
Well, she's going to be fed somehow. I got to work. Because I've written children's books before. I've written 4 children's books before. Yes. It kind of makes sense to start writing for a different audience now. And I'm a huge Colleen Hoover fan and Simon & Schuster and their publishing. The books that they publish are absolutely amazing. And it's about representation as well of female black authors and seeing themselves on shelves being the one that's wanted in the book, you know, the one that's being romanced over, the one that's being their feet are swept away. And I'm so glad that as a publisher, that's something that they really wanted to represent as well. They felt really strongly about that. So I'm excited. It's spicy. It's exciting. It's tantalizing.
When did you write this? Well, middle of the night, breastfeeds?
So we started, because it takes a long time to write, so we started before I even gave birth. I think like 3 months, I was 3 months pregnant. It's when the whole process starts. So it's a really, 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 really long process. And then you have deadlines that you have to meet, and then you can go to printers, which again takes long. So it's been in the pipeline for a long time. It didn't just happen, she gave birth and she wrote a book last week. It's been years. It's been a while, months, actually. It's been months of us kind of creating this book.
So tell us a bit about what it was like growing up in South Africa. You've said that you want to give your little girl a sibling, and obviously we all know your sibling from dancing. Yes. But what was it like?
I have another one.
Were you competitive and always trying to outdo each other?
No. Well, there's 10 years between me and Motsi, and there's 7 years between me and my other sister, Pimelo. So we were not competitive, but I think Mama, were Motsi and Pimelo competitive with each other? No, my mom's like, no, we don't. She's like, we don't do that in this family. Because generally, I don't think we were brought up that way. My mom never raised us to, or put us in an environment where we had to compete against each other. And because we danced, dancing was always categorized by age. So Mutsi was in a different section, my middle sister, and I was like in the kids section. Wow. So we never had to compete against each other. And when we did have to compete against each other, my mom absolutely hated it. She hated it. She doesn't like us going against each other. My dad is constantly reminding us that you are sisters, you have to support each other. And in the African culture, we don't really have competition. In the South African culture, we don't have that. Oh, this is common. It's more like a hierarchy. The older sister talks to the parent, the middle sister deals with the little ones, and the little one is a queen. We're never competitive, and we still are not, and we're so supportive. Like, I love watching my sister on Saturday nights, and she lives with me after the show, so I know she's gonna come back, and then we're gonna debrief, and then we're probably gonna watch the show again, and then I'm gonna be like, you could have done this, she helps me on Dancing on Ice. So we're still very much each other's support system.
That's so lovely. And speaking of support, as a mum who's just completed her first year of motherhood, Tick, if someone's listening who's right in the thick of those newborn days, what words of advice do you have for them?
Oh, man, you will get through it. You will get through it. They grow up and then you start to learn their patterns. And you definitely will get through it. I think every mom starts to find their routine and find their way and get to know their child a little bit better. But, yeah, you got to go in it, get through it, and then you'll get over it.
Sound advice. Now, before we let you go and deal with snack time, we have to ask if there's any truth in the rumours that you're heading into the I'm a Celebrity jungle.
I cannot confirm or deny anything, but I'm a big, big fan of the show and I've loved it my whole career.
That's not good enough. No, that's not a good enough answer.
That is all, that's the best I can do at this time.
At this time, right. I think we all know what that means.
Well, you enjoy those kangaroo testicles.
I have no idea what that means. No idea. If people want me to eat things, they will make me. If they don't, then they won't.
Let me just say, I think that khaki will really suit you. I think it's your colour.
Okay, we will see.
Will we? Will we see?
Okay. See.
We're so mean.
Who knows?
Oti, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been so fab to chat to you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Netmums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.